Welcome to Distant Voices, a podcast presented by Willamette Week. Join us every Wednesday to hear members of the Willamette Week newsroom talk to Oregonians about how they are overcoming the pandemic. Come back on Saturdays to listen to Dive, a podcast hosted by me, Hank Sanders, that takes a look at the Willamette Week cover story and includes interviews with the biggest names in the state. You can enjoy more episodes of these podcasts on this channel and learn more about our work at wweek.com. Enjoy this episode of Distant Voices.
Hi there, my name is Shannon, and I am here with another episode of Distant Voices, talking with Scott Oviatt, who is the Snow Survey Supervisor for the Natural Resources Conservation Service, Service Oregon. Sorry about that. Scott, how's it going?
Very good, thank you.
So to get right into it, what kind of effects did the massive heat wave last month have on the snowpack here in Oregon?
Well, the majority of our snowpack, which affects surface water, had previously melted out due to the unseasonably warm conditions we had in late April and May. So a lot of the stream flow benefits that we normally see in the springtime were already essentially downstream at that point. However, with the extreme heat event, a lot of the high elevation snow, in particular on Mount Hood, melted very rapidly, and we did see some damage, for instance, on some infrastructure and roadways on the eastern side of Mount Hood. So that loss is not beneficial, of course, because that's a water supply that would enhance or continue stream flows throughout the summer months. And with that rapid melt out and washing downstream, it makes it unavailable for future use. So it is a concern.
And where exactly on Mount Hood were those damages?
It was on the east fork of Mount Hood River, so that it was the northeast side where the large snowfields generally maintain throughout the year. The lower flanks of that melted out so rapidly just due to those warm temperatures that we've talked about.
And so, as you mentioned, last month's heat wave was hardly the first abnormally warm weather that we dealt with this year. So I guess sort of how bad off were we already going into that heat wave?
Yeah, across the region, we had melted out our snowpack 2 to 3 weeks early. In addition, we've had a very dry spring with most mountain locations, our measurement sites, our snowtell sites, receiving record low amounts of precipitation since March 1st. So that, in combination with previously low stream flows, the rapid melt out of the snowpack, led to the drought conditions which are being seen across the state and across the region at this point. So without that surface water, we have less available for irrigation, for water storage, for in-stream support of salmon fisheries and those type of things. So, and then we go into the fact that the hot temperatures with the hot winds exacerbated things like the cherry crops and the blueberry crops. So there are concerns across the region.
So I guess just looking more year wide, how abnormal is the snowpack that we're seeing this year?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's not necessarily abnormal. We saw above normal snowpack accumulated through April 1st. However, the rapid melt out of that and with the warmer temperatures leads to the downstream flows much sooner in the year than we're used to or that we plan on, from municipalities for agricultural purposes and for in-stream flows, even recreation. So there's all kinds of things that are going on with it. The main thing that we've been seeing, if we always keep referring to the last 20 years or so, is these widely variable and extreme conditions. We're getting warm temperatures in the middle of winter. We're getting excessively warm temperatures, as we've talked about, at the end of June. Plus, then we have things like the extended ice storm and snowstorm we had in February here. We've had floods in eastern Oregon. So we're seeing all kinds of extreme events. And I think that's the biggest challenge that we as residents of the Pacific Northwest are facing at this point.
Yeah, kind of on that note, I'm curious if your team completed the recent 30-year averages period that would have ended in 2020? And if so, did you see any sort of noteworthy shifts?
We are in the process, NRCS is in the process of recalculating ours. They will become active on October 1st, the beginning of the 2022 water year, which is October 1st, 2021 through September 30th, 2022. So the Weather Service and a few other agencies have completed, and I think you've seen the press releases and the impacts there. We fully anticipate seeing some of the same things, you know, the shift in the normals to reflect those warmer temperatures and variable conditions that we've seen over the last 30 years from 1991 through 2020.
All right, Scott. Well, those are actually all my questions, unless you have anything that you would like to add or ask or clarify.
I think we as a society are facing challenging times now, responding to these widely variable conditions, plus the lack of surface water. Surface water, of course, is what makes our area thrive in terms of fisheries, agriculture, recreation, and we need to find ways to become sustainable and resilient to respond to these changing conditions.
Sophie Peel, I'm a reporter with Willamette Week. Today I am sitting down with Kim McCarty, who's the executive director of the Community Alliance of Tenants here in town. Kim, thank you for joining me today. Really appreciate it. So what we're talking about today is the eviction moratorium in Oregon, which as we know is expiring today. So come July 1st, Oregonians are expected to pay their current monthly rent. That being said, last week, the federal government did extend its eviction moratorium for an additional month. And so what kind of timeline would Kat ideally like to see? I mean, you know, Oregon's, it's pretty clear that the legislature is not going to take steps to extend it again. But what kind of timeline, ideal timeline, would Kat have wanted to see with the eviction moratorium? Like, is there a point in the future, like 6 months from now or a year from now or 3 years from now when, you know, we know that we've expended our resources and that people have regained stability? Like, that seems almost you know, that seems very kind of utopic almost.
Well, I think if over a year ago you had said that we would be extending the eviction moratorium as long as we have, people would have said the very same thing that you just said. It's utopic, wouldn't be possible. But we've discovered that actually it was completely necessary, very possible. And then we already have past experience that tells us when we're in a crisis like this, that our low-income communities take the brunt of it, and it takes them years to recover. And it takes us, we've already done Portland State University already came out with a study that said if we don't take action of this nature, it will take $1 to $3 billion of public resource to just address the health concerns related to this versus the 400 to maybe 800 million of projected rent that is currently unpaid.
Mm-hmm. So I know, you know, kind of the number that's been bopping around the state about how many people are at risk of eviction come July 1st, maybe August 1st now, is 80,000. And, you mm-hmm. know, currently Multnomah County says we have about 4,000 visibly homeless people, and then about 16,000 people who are visibly homeless as well as sort of on the margins of becoming homeless. I mean, how can you like quantify adding 80,000 people to that metric? I mean, we've been fighting so hard to get that metric down over the years. And what would it look like for the nonprofits who are sort of tasked with, you know, dealing with this and getting people connected to housing and resources? And I mean, what would 80,000 people added to that system look like?
It would be a complete meltdown of our systems. We already know, nationally, advocates are saying it'll take 1 to 3 years to get our low-income community in back to recovery with our current issues. That's what we've seen historically. A household that is facing eviction can be on their record for, you know, for a very long time, if not their lifetime. And we know that it can take decades for people to recover from an eviction. So whole communities that have face something like this, we're talking about really devastating a whole group of people. But in terms of what our social services agencies have been saying here in Oregon, what I'm hearing is that, as you said, they're already at capacity. So even if it's just a few extra a few hundred more households in the system, that will be a crisis. If it's a few thousand, that is unimaginable. If it's 80,000, that's completely unimaginable, because no one is doing the work we know to address that. You know, there isn't a budget for tent cities, right? There isn't a budget for emergency shelters. There's no plan in place that I know of that would address housing that many households. So really the only realistic way to help people is to help them remove that debt, keep housed in place, because the current system is only designed really to address the chronic homelessness that's been with us for decades. And it took us decades to get to the point that we're at right now, to just address, you know, that crisis.
Are there sort of like different, like how do people hang on to sort of a semblance of housing before it goes to worst case scenario, which is, you know, sleeping on the streets? Like, do you expect a portion would, you know, move, you know, across state lines to stay with family, or, you know, move to motels, or sort of what are different ways that do you foresee people, if they are evicted or have to leave their housing, you know, sort of adapt before, you know, ending up in a tent?
Yeah. We're hearing anecdotally that there are already migrations happening nationwide. I don't know how that's happening in Oregon. We already know that in Oregon, we already have a housing shortage. So if you're evicted, the question is, where are you going to go? Where is housing affordable? And essentially, it's not affordable anywhere in Oregon, especially for our low-income communities. We already have a housing crisis related to the wildfires that's putting pressure on our housing stock, that's thousands of families from that area. So, you know, to answer that question, how it will play out, people are going to go into debt. People, of course, don't want to lose their housing. They're going to do everything in their power to seek help. But help we've already experienced is taking time to get to people. Mm-hmm. They're going to borrow from family. They're going to put expenses on their credit card so that they can continue to pay that housing expense until finally all of the options run out. And then that's when we see people finally facing eviction. And then how that will play out in the courts, you know, we hope it will play out fairly, but we're worried because we have seen it already where judges have been where landlords have been bringing to court defective notices. Mm-hmm. That's well out of proportion to what we've seen historically. So clearly landlords are using the tools that they have to evict people improperly.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Distant Voices. Thank you to everyone who was a part of this episode, including the guests and Willamette Week Newsroom. Also, special thank you to AmpMusic.co and Heather Witte for the music that you heard on this podcast. For more great content, be sure to follow Dive by Willamette Week on all podcast platforms, join us Saturdays for our Dive podcast show, and follow along with Willamette Week's content at WWeek.com and on all social platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.